From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, President Obama's mea culpa. He apologises for the disastrous rollout of the Affordable Care Act and tells Democrats he knows he's put them in an awful position ahead of next year's midterm elections.
I hear you loud and clear. I said that I would do everything we can to fix this problem, and today I'm offering an idea that will help do it.
Also today, Republicans kill the prospects for comprehensive immigration reform in the United States. Seedier and seedier, Toronto's Mayor Rob Ford threatens lawsuits over prostitution allegations.
The revelations yesterday of cocaine, escorts, prostitution has pushed me over the line.
And from Pakistan, the perils of being a journalist in one of the world's most hazardous environments. That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. President Barack Obama has announced that formerly canceled health care plans will now be extended for 1 year's time. He spoke in response to public outcry after millions of Americans received notice that their existing health care plans were canceled because they no longer complied with new regulations under the president's controversial Obamacare plan.
The Obama administration said that newer, better options were available to those who received policy cancellation notices. But in light of continued issues enrolling in the president's new health care options, the old policies will be allowed to function for an additional year. Obama was apologetic for the continued issues with the rollout of his Affordable Care Act. However, he said he's determined to fix the problems.
My pledge to the American people is that we're going to solve the problems that are there. We're going to get it right, and the Affordable Care Act is going to work.
But the public does not seem so sure. Newly released poll numbers show that the president is facing his lowest approval rating since taking office. President Obama says he knows he needs to work to earn back the public's trust.
The Russian government is attempting to woo Egypt's military coup-appointed leaders into an arms deal worth an estimated $4 billion. It comes as the U.S. scales back its military aid to Egypt after army shootings of protesters. Tom Barton reports from Moscow.
This would be the biggest arms deal between Russia and Egypt since the Cold War, said to include everything from riot gear and special forces equipment to MiG-29 fighter jets, anti-aircraft and anti-tank missile systems. But Moscow's eagerness stands in marked contrast to the US government that suspended hundreds of millions of dollars of aid and deliveries of its own fighter jets as Egypt's new military government cracked down on supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi, killing thousands. Moscow's only concern is Egypt's ability to pay for all of the hardware. However, there are reports that Cairo may give Russia a naval base on the Mediterranean in return.
The U.S. Navy's aircraft carrier George Washington has arrived in the Philippines to help with rescue and recovery efforts following Typhoon Haiyan. The Philippine government has confirmed 2,300 dead, with the United Nations saying 11 million have been affected by the superstorm. Priscilla Huff has more.
The job of the 5,000-member crew of the American aircraft carrier George Washington is to provide a platform to move supplies. The biggest challenge following the biggest storm ever to hit the island nation of the Philippines is infrastructure. The arrival of the big ship triples the number of helicopters in the region, delivering food and medical supplies. The U.S. is joined by other nations in expediting rescue and recovery resources to the Philippines, while China is facing criticism for its limited response to Typhoon Haiyan.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. The governor of the U.S. state of Ohio has delayed the execution of a convicted child murderer after the inmate made an unprecedented request to donate his organs. 40-year-old Ronald Phillips was scheduled to be put to death by lethal injection this Thursday, but a stay of execution has been issued while medical experts study the case. Lorna Shattuck reports.
Ronald Phillips was sentenced to death for raping and killing a 3-year-old girl in 1993. But this week, just days before his execution was due, he asked to donate a kidney to his mother and his heart to his sister. His attorney said the request is a genuine attempt to do good rather than a delaying tactic. Governor John Kasich acknowledged that this is uncharted territory, but has reset the time for the execution to the 2nd of July next year. He says that if Phillips is found to be a viable kidney donor for his mother, who's on dialysis, or others awaiting transplant, then the procedures will be performed and the prisoner then returned to death row. Ohio's prison medical policy does accommodate organ donation, but prison officials initially rejected this request, saying it came too late to work out logistics and security concerns.
Toronto's police have announced they've spent the last 3 years taking down a child pornography ring, leading to the arrest of 341 people and to the rescue of nearly 400 children. The investigation, called Project Spade, centered around Azov Films, which distributed child pornography to 94 countries. And one of America's most notorious gangsters will spend the rest of his life in jail for a crime spree, including 11 murders. The Boston mobster James Whitey Bulger was one of the FBI's most wanted criminals before his capture in 2011, after spending 16 years on the run. The 84-year-old was sentenced to consecutive life sentences in jail and to pay $20 million to his victims' families. And that's the latest Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
That's on me, and that's why I'm trying to fix it. And as I said earlier, I guess last week, and I will repeat, that's something I deeply regret because it's scary getting a cancellation notice.
President Obama speaking at the White House earlier today in a lengthy apology for the troubled rollout of his health care reforms. He announced what he called an administrative fix that will allow people to renew their current insurance plan for an additional year, even if it doesn't comply with the Affordable Care Act. Last week, millions of Americans received cancellation notices from their insurance companies, leading to a storm of criticism of the president, who has always publicly insisted that no American would lose existing coverage if they didn't want to. FSN's Alice Olstein has our report on the president's statement and the reaction on Capitol Hill.
Key Obama allies like Bill Clinton and many Democrats in Congress pushing changes to the president's signature health care reform law. The White House preempted them Thursday by announcing his own transition. In a rare press conference at the White House, the president said the Department of Health and Human Services will use enforcement discretion and immediately give insurance companies the option of allowing consumers to renew their existing health plans for an additional year, even if they don't meet the standards of the Affordable Care Act.
The bottom line is insurers can extend current plans that would otherwise be canceled into 2014, and Americans whose plans have been canceled can choose to re-enroll in the same kind of plan.
The president compared the new standards, such as making all plans cover preventative care, to laws requiring all new cars to have airbags and seatbelts, but said it's not fair to make people immediately buy new cars if they can't afford them. Under the regulation announced Thursday, the insurance companies will have to remind their customers what their current plan does and does not cover, and tell them they may be eligible for cheaper, better plans on the federal exchanges.
As long as you're healthy, things seem to be going pretty good. And so a lot of people think, I've got pretty good insurance, until they get sick, and then suddenly they look at the fine print and they've got a $50,000 out-of-pocket expense that they can't pay.
Second only to complaints about the slow, glitchy federal healthcare website, news about people receiving cancellation letters from their insurance companies has dominated the discourse on Capitol Hill in the 6 weeks since the launch of the insurance exchanges. This is only happening to a tiny fraction of the population, people who don't get healthcare from their employer, aren't old enough for Medicare or poor enough for Medicaid, and have no health problems that would keep them from getting cheap insurance. But it's become a rallying point for lawmakers like West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin.
I don't think you want to go back to where people want their one illness away from being bankrupt. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I don't think anyone expected someone to take their insurance away from them. If it's affordable health care and if I like what I had, let me keep it.
Manchin is co-sponsoring a bill to make a one-year exemption similar to what President Obama proposed Thursday, except it would require companies to extend these subpar insurance plans instead of leaving it as a voluntary option. Many economists and writers, including Ezra Klein at The Washington Post and Sarah Lewick at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, say this could hurt the basic premise of shared risk at the heart of the Affordable Care Act. If insurance plans don't have to cover mental health treatments, for example, the cost of mental health treatments for those who do need it will skyrocket. Some lawmakers, including Iowa Democrat Tom Harkin, have similar concerns.
You can't, in the individual marketplace, continue to have plans that don't cover this new regime, you know, where they can't cancel if you get sick and pre-existing conditions and all that kind of stuff. So to say that, well, you can keep that, that's not really right. No, you can't keep that. We don't want you ripped off anymore. We don't want you getting a policy that you pay huge deductibles for. We don't want you having a policy that, hey, guess what? You get cancer, they cancel you. There's those little fine prints in there that nobody knows about.
It's worth noting that Senator Harkin is retiring next year, while many lawmakers calling for the extension of the old plans are up for re-election. The president is characterizing the regulation announced Thursday as a temporary transitional move, but senior White House officials told reporters on a call that it's possible it could be extended. Meanwhile, Republicans in the House of Representatives are pushing a 2-year extension that would go even further, not only allowing existing customers to keep substandard plans, but allowing companies to market such plans to new customers. The House plans to vote on this bill, which the president is calling an attempt to undermine health care reform, on Friday. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
So, will the president's appearance at the White House today do anything to stem the criticism of his administration for the way in which the Affordable Care Act has been rolled out? FSN's Simon Marks spoke to Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report.
Well, it was clear during the press conference that he was addressing his remarks as much to the American public as he was to Democratic leaders, including telling them that he was quite sorry and he felt very bad about the fact that he had also put their credibility on the line. But it does not seem as if it's done enough to mollify Democrats on the Hill who want to be able to vote for something. It's not enough for them to simply say, well, we're going to go with the president on this. He's going to fix this. They want to be able to put their name next to a bill that says the Fix Obamacare bill. And I think that's going to go forward.
So are you saying that he's not out of the political woods yet?
I think that it's clear that the healthcare.gov fix is not enough for some Democrats, the fix that the president put forward today. They want to be able to, as much as they can, control their own fate. They don't want to leave it in the hands of the administration. It's also clear from that press conference that the president saying he even expects that there will probably be some more problems. So if I'm a Senate Democrat or even a House Democrat, I'm up in 2014. I'm not going to wait until November 30th for more problems potentially to come up before I have a chance to have my say.
There also seems to be reaction from the insurance industry just over the last few hours that suggests that what the president is proposing, this so-called fix, could actually lead to a significant recalculation on the part of the insurance companies.
Right. And this, I think, is the bigger issue here for the healthcare law. It's not just fixing the website that's the issue. The issue is that there is a serious disruption in the way that healthcare plans are being delivered and the kinds of healthcare plans, even for folks who have them, that they will be able to hold on to. So, for example, if you are a person who has healthcare through your employer, there's no guarantee that the healthcare that you have at the cost you have with the doctors that you have is going to be the same next year as it is this year. We're already hearing stories about small businesses and others who've seen an increase in their premiums. So this is not simply an issue of people who are currently uninsured trying to get insurance or people who are insured individually being able to keep their current insurance. There's going to be all sorts of collateral issues that will be part of the discussion in 2014, regardless of whether the website is fixed or not.
Now, Now, while President Obama was acknowledging today that Democratic candidates could face challenges in next year's midterm elections as a result of the problems with the rollout of healthcare reform, many Latino activists were targeting the Republicans. They stand accused of burying the prospects for a comprehensive immigration bill this year after the Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner, had this to say yesterday.
The idea that we're going to take up a 1,300-page bill that no one had ever read, which is what the Senate did, is not going to happen in the House.
So, at a time when other Republicans like Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey are urging the party to embrace Hispanic and Latino voters, what does the death of immigration reform mean? Earlier, I spoke with Roberto Espria of the community organization Casa de Maryland.
It's cowardly because he's sending mixed signals to the community. One signal he's sending to the community is, I'd like to do it, but just, I don't have time. We don't have the time. But yet they find time to vote down Obamacare 47 times. And they find time to shut down the government on false pretenses. So instead of doing things that aren't helping the country, he should do something that would help the country, like immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship for the 11 million people that are here undocumented in this country. It's good for our economy. It's good for our country. And we need to have him do it now and not tomorrow, now.
What can now be done in terms of furthering the cause of immigration reform? Are we in this deadlock now until possibly 2015?
Yeah, well, it's an easy fix. I mean, all he has to do is realize that the Senate already passed the bill, which it's on his desk. He has to put that bill up for a vote, and he could do it tomorrow morning if he wanted to. Put that bill up for the vote, and right now we already have enough members of Congress that are willing to vote for it, including 28 members of Republicans that have openly said that they would vote in favor of immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship. So it's easy for him to do it, and if he delays and keeps playing games, then our community will remember this. When it comes down to vote in the primary, in elections in 2014 and 2016. So I think that the best thing that the Republican Party can do is put this thing up for a vote, let it pass, and try to gain our community's support in the future. But right now, they have a long way to go.
You mentioned next year's elections. I mean, how do you think this could play out for Republicans?
It's going to be a disaster for them because they think that we don't know what they're doing. They think that they can put the blame on President Obama, on Congress. But we know who are the people that are stopping this, and we know it's the Republicans, and we know it's John Boehner specifically. So, you know, he may feel like he's safe in his district, but there are many members of Congress that aren't safe. Many members in California and New York that if he continues playing games, they're going to be both voted out of office. And we'll have a supermajority of members of Democrats in the House that will support immigration reform.
Roberto Espria from Casa de Maryland. This is FSN Reports. China, Cuba, Saudi Arabia and Russia, countries not often considered the foremost human rights leaders. But this week saw those nations and 10 others granted 3-year terms on the UN Human Rights Council, drawing rebukes from human rights watchdogs and Western diplomats. From our bureau at the United Nations, Stephen Fee has our report.
Required majority.
UN member states cast their ballots Tuesday, and the General Assembly's President John W. Ash read out the totals.
Vietnam, 184. China, 176. Maldives, 164.
Positions on the 47-member Human Rights Council are apportioned regionally, so most countries ran unopposed in their blocks. In fact, just 2 nominees, South Sudan and Uruguay, didn't make the cut. But while that made the proceedings perhaps less than riveting, the balloting certainly drew controversy, particularly from human rights groups who say some of the new members have a less than stellar track record.
When countries like China, Cuba, Saudi Arabia are elected on the country, it's never very good news for human rights defenders around the world.
That's Philippe Bolopion, the UN Director for Human Rights Watch in New York. His organization says newly elected members, including China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Vietnam, and Algeria, have refused to allow UN monitors into their countries to investigate alleged abuses.
Some of these countries have certainly not led by example by refusing to cooperate with human rights mechanisms from the UN. So who are they to then point fingers at others or give lessons to other countries on the council?
In a statement, U.S. envoy Samantha Power also criticized some of those new members, though she didn't name any names, and said they must do more to protect and advance their citizens' universal rights. Despite those concerns, Bolipian says a Human Rights Council exclusively comprised of virtuous countries, like, say, Switzerland, wouldn't represent the complexities the council faces.
Is the Human Rights Council perfect? No. Is it doing valuable work? Yes, it is. In many crises, the Human Rights Council has reacted in a timely fashion. They have created commissions of inquiry to look into violence in places like Ivory Coast or Syria. So it's still a very important body when it comes to human rights.
The 14 members will serve three-year terms, and no country can serve more than two terms consecutively. Stephen Fee at the United Nations, New York.
Now, in terms of dangerous professions, being a journalist in Pakistan is ranking higher than ever. So far this year, five journalists have been killed, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. The lobbying group says many other reporters have been kidnapped, beaten or threatened over the nature of their reporting. Hamid Mir, a Pakistani journalist and TV host, told me just how dangerous his profession has become.
Pakistan is one of the most dangerous places for the media. I can give you my own example. From last couple of months, I am not sleeping at my home. I changed my place after 2-3 days. I am forced to send my children out of Pakistan. I have not even allowed my wife to live with me. The Taliban and the intelligence agencies, they are also threatening me. I'm not the only one in Pakistan. A lot of other journalists, they are also facing the same kind of situation. We are in the crossfire. We are facing threats both from the intelligence agencies and the Taliban and the other militants. And in the last 10 years, more than 95 Pakistani journalists have been killed. They were assassinated, they were kidnapped, and then their dead bodies were thrown on the roads. Vulnerable place in Pakistan for the media is the Balochistan province. That the government of Pakistan is failed to provide any kind of security to journalists. Every day, some senior journalists, they contact me. We talk to each other about the threats. And, we are helpless. And it's very difficult for us to continue this profession. But we are doing that, and we are hopeful that one day the government will be able to provide us security.
So almost a year to the day, you yourself were the target of an attempted assassination. If you could just tell me about that particular incident.
In November 2012, a bomb was planted under my car, and the reason was that the Taliban attacked Malala Yousafzai, a young girl who is campaigning for the girls' education, and the Taliban attacked her, and I supported her on my show on Jio television, and then they sent me a letter that they will target me, and after some days, a bomb was planted under my car, and then the Taliban accepted the responsibility. On the other side, the security agencies and some intelligence agencies, they are also not happy with the media. They also threat myself, other journalists.
Pakistani journalist Hamid Mir. Now to Toronto, where Mayor Rob Ford's confessional train just keeps rolling along. His day began with an apology for using crude language yesterday in an attempt to rebuff allegations that he's consorted with prostitutes.
The revelations yesterday of cocaine, escorts, prostitution has pushed me over the line, and I used unforgivable language. And again, I apologize. These allegations are 100% lies.
Just hours later, he was back in front of the cameras with another announcement aimed at fending off those calling for his immediate resignation.
I fully realize in the past, I have drank alcohol in excess. I wish you to know I'm receiving support from a team of healthcare professionals. I am taking accountability and receiving advice from people with expertise.
In the last few days, the mayor has acknowledged smoking crack cocaine, buying it, and finding himself in a series of what he calls drunken stupors. But while he's put his hands up to what he calls making mistakes, he insists he's still got a job to do in public office. Here's what he said earlier in the week during a session of Toronto City Council.
I understand the embarrassment that I've caused every resident in the city. I'm humiliated by it, but I cannot change the past, Councillor Thompson. All I can do is move on, and that's what I'm doing.
Earlier, I spoke to Kevin Donovan, head of the Toronto Star's investigative team, about the growing calls for Mayor Ford to go.
Rob Ford came out this morning and made some rather odd comments, pushing back against some of the information that came out against him yesterday from the police investigation. But one of the things that he said was that the people who spoke to the police, who would be his former staff members and a waiter at a Toronto bar, he was going to sue them for defamation.
Can you just give us some timeline here?
Yeah, Mayor Rob Ford became mayor of Toronto, which is North America's fourth largest city, 3 years ago, and caught a lot of interest among voters because he's said he's there for the taxpayers and saving them money. And fast forward to today, there's been, since that time, 6 months of revelations against Mayor Ford, and it has finally come to a head in the last couple of weeks where he has admitted to smoking crack cocaine in a drunken stupor. He's admitted to having issues with alcohol. He has just admitted to purchasing illegal drugs, and these admissions of his are now coming quite swiftly. Yesterday, he admitted to drinking and driving. The thing that people expect him to do is to go to some sort of a rehabilitation center, take some time away from work. He refuses to, and I don't think he ever will. He hopes to stand for election next October.
How damaging do you think the antics of your mayor, your city's mayor, have been for the reputation of Toronto?
Well, hopefully it's not giving the entire city a bad image, but certainly we've become, and Mayor Ford has become, the butt of late-night comedian humor. There will be more tonight, I'm sure, after the comments he made this morning. And I've heard stories from people who are traveling, and they're in Bangkok or Istanbul, and they say to somebody, "I'm from Toronto," and people say, "Oh, what's going on with your mayor there?" And that's something that has never happened in the history of Toronto's municipal government. Our politicians are usually not that controversial.
How do you see this next chapter in Rob Ford's social and political life playing out over the coming weeks?
That's an excellent question. I think there will be more revelations. Certainly my newspaper will be publishing more unique stories exposing things that he's done. But he will continue to deny, and I don't see him going away at all. Our city council yesterday passed a motion, not unanimously, but a strong majority, asking him to step down. He's refused to do that. Tomorrow, using some powers they have in council, they're going to gradually try and strip his office of most of its powers. This is uncharted territory for the council and the people of Toronto. We'll have to see how it turns out.
And that's the Thursday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of the programme by emailing us at reports@featurestory.com. That's reports@featurestory.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're there at Feature Story. Coming up on Friday, we look at what's been a record-breaking week for the art world. That's Friday. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.